Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and those who, through creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. My guest today, Reverend Robert Leavers, is a 1977 graduate of Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary in South Hamilton, Massachusetts, where he earned a Master's of Divinity. He is also a 1991 graduate of Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary with a Doctor of Ministry. Robert has served in various ministerial capacities in Illinois, Arizona, and Colorado. He was an active Air Force chaplain from 2004 through 2012 and was president and CEO of the Samaritan Institute from 2012 through 2015. Reverend Leavers currently serves as the executive presbyter for the Pueblo Presbytery in southeastern Colorado. Good morning, Bob. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Well, thank you, Patty. I appreciate the invitation to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. I was blessed to hear you speak at our First Presbyterian Church in Los Angeles a few weeks ago, and I said, man, I've got to have that man on the show. He just really impressed me with your message, and you're just a very dynamic person, and you obviously have a love for God, and you are filled with the Holy Spirit. So that's the type of person that I love to have on the show to share with my listeners. Father, no. would you share with us what childhood experiences influenced you to pursue ministry? Did you grow up in a Christian home or not so much? Did you start your Christian walk later on in life or as a child? Or give us a little background on where you were, what things looked like for you then.
Well, it was what I would call a nominal Christian home. Mom made sure that I got to Sunday school, but at third grade, I became a Sunday school dropout. And what happened, and I remember this to this day, what happened that turned the corner that made me drop out of Sunday school. And I just would not go back. And what it was is we were all sitting around, third graders, sitting around the Sunday school table, and the teacher was having us go around, and we all had to read a verse out of the Bible, you know, kind of thing, out of the story that we were studying that day. And I was a terrible reader. And I remember stumbling over the verse and the words and the names or whatever it was. And the teacher going, oh, geez. You know, the big sighs and the, you know, the, and it made me feel terrible. And that was it. I didn't go back. And I told folks at church, you know, a lot of times we church shoot ourselves in the foot by the way we sometimes come across. And I'll tell you what, that teacher shot themselves in the foot. And I didn't go back until high school. And a friend of mine in the marching band in high school was going to a youth group the next town over at a Presbyterian church. And he invited me to go to his youth group. We were both freshmen. So I went to a youth group with him, and there was this little blonde girl who I didn't know she was a freshman also, but I found out later on. And anyway, long story short, I kept coming back because I thought she was pretty special. And in fact, she was, and she's... She's been my wife now for 48 years, and we've been dating for 53 years. So anyway, just, you know, good stuff there that God used Debbie really to bring me to the church. And then once I started coming to youth group, I'd only been there 2 weeks, they were going to have a retreat, and they invited me to come along. So I wasn't quite sure what that was, but I went anyway. And on Saturday night at the retreat, the senior pastor talked about Jesus and gave an invitation for anybody who wanted to come forward. And in my junior high theology at the time, I thought, well, if this is right, I better get on board. And if it isn't right, what have I got to lose? That was my thinking, Patty. And I committed myself, my life, to follow Christ. And then the Holy Spirit took over from there. And The rest is history. But as far as influence to pursue ministry, it happened to be the associate pastor there who was working with the youth group. Now we would call this a mega church. It was about 2,500 people, but I didn't know that at the time. And Reverend Alan Rosito was the associate pastor, and he loved us in spite of ourselves. And I thought, you know, I want to be like him. I want to influence young people and encourage them. And I'll tell you, out of that youth group in our senior year in high school, the graduating class, our senior year of high school, five of us wound up in full-time ministry just out of that one class. So he had quite a dynamic impact throughout his years of ministry. And it was because of Reverend Rosito's love for us that I wanted to emulate that. You know, very much like the Apostle Paul when he says, you know, follow me, I'm following Christ. You know, if you can't get yourself all the way to understanding or putting yourself in a relationship with what's it like to follow Jesus, pick somebody who is following Jesus and emulate them. And that's what I did with Reverend Rosito. And so I went into ministry. Ministry has been my big focus throughout my whole ministry. Even when I was a senior pastor, I was still working with the youth group, and we hired an associate pastor to work with the senior members of the congregation. And so anyway, youth work has always been my love, my first love. So I don't know if that helps or muddies the water, but that's my background.
And no, that's very I thank you for sharing that, Bob. And, you know, when you talk about that third grade experience, oh, man, I mean, it is amazing how an incident like that can just, it can stay with you for your whole life if you allow it to, you know?
Well, and, Patty, I'm 69 and I still remember it.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
It, you know, and it hurt. And because of that, let's see, from third grade, well, for 6 years. Third grade to ninth grade, I didn't go. That was it. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. But I'll tell you what, this youth ministry thing even hung over into the Air Force with my work with the Air Force, which was kind of interesting when they found out that I had a youth ministry background.
Really?
Yeah. Let me explain a little bit about the Air Force chaplaincy and what I did there, if that's okay.
Sure.
Because it ties in with this. First off, I went into the Air Force as a chaplain late in life. I was 38 years old, and you have to get in by the time you're 40. So I was really an old guy going to boot camp. You know, I mean, I was older than most of the instructors. But when I first went in, I was a reservist, and then when 9/11 happened, I got called up to active duty. And in essence, I was on active duty for 12 years after 9/11, and then went back to the reserve component and then retired out of the reserve. So it was sort of a back and forth. So I was in the reserves and serving a congregation at the same time as a chaplain. Okay. And I would drill on my days off, and we worked out the Sundays and different other things. And it was just, I found it to be a very challenging, expanding, delightful experience, sometimes way freer than being a pastor in a local church. And what I mean by that is I didn't have to worry about buildings. I didn't have to worry about budgets. All I had to worry about was ministry. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is so freeing, you know, and the access that you have to people that you wouldn't have in the church. Because a lot of these folks would never come to church. But yet, you're at work with them every day, and they get to know you. And if they have something they want to talk about, they come and talk to you, you know. And it's a ministry of presence. It's a, you know, I remember when we were in chaplain school, they said, just remember that you are representing the holy. And when you walk in and you got that cross, you got those tablets, whatever it is on your uniform, people anticipate that you are representing the Holy One. Now, you interpret that any way you want. Interpret that God, Yahweh. But, and it always happened, Patty. I mean, you walk in and somebody's telling a dirty joke, and it's, oh, wait, chaplain's here. you know, it was that respect. It was like unbelievable. But anyway, in the course of this Air Force active duty stint that I had, they needed counselors at the Air Force leadership camp. Now, the Air Force Reserve puts on four high school leadership camps around the country per year. They take 100 young people, high school young people, per camp. So it's 400 people. We'd have about 2,500 apply. You had to be a child of an Air Force reservist. And they took two from each state and then a couple from Guam and some of the territories. And if you got selected, everything, even your transportation, was paid for. Well, they needed counselors for these camps. And I found out about it, and I went in and volunteered. And then when they found out what my background was, they said, hey, you know, we have a leadership youth council that plans these summer events, and we'd like you to be on that as a chaplain representative. So I was a chaplain at all of these camps. And what that meant was I opened the day with prayer and closed the day with prayer as we raised the flag and lowered the flag. And I served on this youth council for 5 years. And it was great. It was up my alley. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have to decide what to wear every day. Because mm-hmm. you had your uniforms. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, going back to what you were talking about, Bob, about how people were, how it's more freeing, the whole communication yeah. thing is more freeing. And it's almost like, oh, I don't have to walk into this building that is a church, which, oh man, to me, that's kind of intimidating because I really have to be on my best behavior. You know, I mean, it's more, and I have to laugh when you talk about the off-color jokes, because there was a pastor here at one time that he was very involved in golf. He loved to play golf. And he said he would go to play golf. And a lot of times after the fact, people would realize that he was a pastor. And they'd be like, oh, you know, we apologize for our bad language or whatever.
Yeah, right,
I'm not the one you have to apologize to.
That's right. That's right. You know, folks get mortified and it's like, oh, you know, it's not my problem.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know. But I'll tell you, Patty, that's exactly right, because I didn't spend much time in my office on base. I would walk around the workspaces and just chat with folks. And if you were out and about and chatting with folks, you know, then they'd catch you in the hallway. Or, you know, they still wouldn't necessarily come by the office, you know. But you were available to them. And that's like when I was a pastor, serving in all of the churches that I served. I would spend the morning doing, you know, admin, writing a sermon or the bulletin or whatever it is, you know, making phone calls, answering emails. But then at noon, that was it. I'm done. I'm out and about now. I'm meeting somebody for lunch, or I'm going to somebody's house, or I'm doing the hospital or this or that. But you're not going to find me in the office because you got to go where the people are. Go to work. I used to go to work with folks a lot, you know, visit them at work. And get permission, of course, ahead of time. But go to work and see how they make their livelihood. What do they do? You know, who's their boss? Say hi to them. Hey, thanks for supporting so-and-so. Got to be out and about.
Exactly. It kind of helps bring, how can I say this? It kind of helps bring you to their level. I mean, they realize that you're human and, you know, you're not sitting in some big office with some big desk, but you're actually out there where they are. And I think that's a huge influence on people.
Well, I didn't do it to make them feel important. My wife says I'm just nosy.
That's funny.
And that I like to just get out and talk to people and see what they do and how they do it. I remember, we were in Southern Illinois when I was the associate pastor there. It was a dairy town. I mean, you know, dairy farmers and kind of thing. So during the harvest, I would drive a truck for some of the farmers on a day-to-day basis just to see what it was like, you know.
Yes.
And you know, have to go down to the grain elevator and this and that and everything and stuff, and then visit them you know, at their farms and see what it's like to milk cows and what you do and how often do you do it, and, you know, learn some of the nomenclature and things like that. Even now, I got to remember, I grew up in New Jersey in the New York metropolitan area. So, you know, we had some farms not too far from us, but I'm not a farm boy. And, you know, when we first moved to Southern Illinois, we had a guy in the congregation, one of our elders, who could witch water.
And Oh, my goodness. How interesting.
I say, you got to be kidding. This can't be true. You know, me, the skeptic, right? So I remember one day I went out to his house after dinner in the summertime, and we went out to the lake, and he had a little dock, and I went out on the dock, and he gave me a stick, and he said, here, hold it. And I held it, and nothing happened. And he reached around from behind me and took my two hands, and I just about fell in the lake. I have no idea how that works. I have no idea what's going on, but I was a believer after that. But I went out there because I said to him, I said, all right, you got to show me. Pretend I'm from Missouri. You got to show me. And and he did. Anyway, you know, it's just experiences. Experience in life with people, you know. Anyway.
And I think what I was trying to say, Bob, is that you take an interest in that day-to-day lives of these people, and I think that's what makes you special, mm-hmm. and that's what makes you able to connect with them instead of expecting them to walk into some office where you might be to talk to you. You know, it's like, oh, this person really cares that I have to get out there and milk 50 cows this morning
and in the evening, and
yes,
you know. But Patty, I gotta say that I've never found the pastorate to be hard. That sounds really dumb, but you know, I've been very, very blessed in the sense that I've never been at a church where there's been a blow up. I've always, you know, there've been some people that maybe didn't agree with me, or we didn't get, you know, exactly what we wanted, or all this kind of stuff. But you know, at the end of the day, if it was responsible on us, on Debbie and I, to live at peace with all folks, we really tried to do that. Now, it didn't always work out that way, but we were never in the middle of a big hoo-ha, you know, but it might have been because I was just so nosy. You know, it's hard to be mad at somebody that you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, within your family, sometimes that happens. But, you know, it's easy to demonize people or persons or groups of people if we don't know them. Mm-hmm. But if we get out and, you know, and I spend time with Fred or Mary, and I hear what their struggles in life are, and what are the things that they're going through with their kids, you know, well, you know what, it's the same things that Debbie and I are going through.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, we're just people too. I mean, you know, you talked to me one time about this thing about people have expectations of larger than life for their pastor and things. And it's like, no, I think the thing to be as a pastor is another pilgrim walking along with a whole bunch of other pilgrims. And, and if pastors do that, but the problem is, I would say most pastors are introverts, and they enjoy studying. And they enjoy being in the study and mm-hmm. have to screw themselves up, you know, to go out and visit. And there were days like that for me, Patty, where, you know, man, I got to go out tonight after dinner and go visit somebody at their home. I don't want to do that. Oh, man, there's a football mm-hmm. game on, and I'd rather stay home with the kids. And you know, I go out and do it, and by golly, I got more out of it. And I came home so pumped up and so excited about what I learned about this family. I don't know if it's just being nosy or if it's just being interested in people, but I'm gonna go with interested in people, Patty.
Well, I think that's probably something that God has equipped you with the calling, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, my decision to go into the Air Force Reserve as a chaplain was one of my best decisions. And actually, it really, really wasn't even my decision. I'd talked about it for years, And then finally Debbie said to me, she said, listen, she said, you're 38 years old. I don't want to hear it when you're 60 and you didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I did it. And it was great. It was a great experience and a very broadening experience.
Yeah, Air Force is close to my heart. My sister and brother-in-law were 20 years in the Air Force, and my husband did 4 years in the Air Force. So of all the services, I think the Air Force...
Well, now we won't get into that. But I remember asking Debbie, I said, well, which branch do you think I should go in? And she said, I would ask you to not go into the Navy, because I would like to, you know, have us together as a family. And I said, okay, I get that. Mm-hmm. You know, I get that. Hey, you asked at one point about the Samaritan Institute at my time there.
Yes, I'd love to hear about that, because I read up a little bit on it, but our listeners probably don't know anything about it. So share with us about that, if you would, Bob.
Yeah, sure. That was after I not retired from the Air Force, but when I went off active duty and was in the reserves again, and then anyway applied. What it was is they had a position for president and CEO, the founding president and CEO of 42 years, R.J. Ross, also a Presbyterian minister, by the way, was retiring, and they needed someone to take his place. So the Samaritan Institute has changed its name now, but Samaritan Institute was a group of about 50 to 60 counseling centers. Health centers that were faith-based around the country and a couple overseas. And usually they were sponsored by churches, different organizations. But you didn't have to be a quote-unquote religious person to come to a Samaritan center and receive mental health assistance. And it was all on a sliding scale and different things. So this group of 50 or 60 different centers around the country banded together for accreditation purposes and resources and different other things. So that was our organization. What we got into, I was there for 3 years, and it was really a transition between the founding president and the current president. And we changed the structure with the board of directors and how we were doing things and stuff a little bit. You know what happened is... You know, Franklin Graham came along with his Samaritan's Purse, right?
Yes.
Good organization. Messed us up.
Oh, no.
It was a Samaritan Institute, and they said, oh, you're connected with Franklin Graham. It's like, no, we're not connected with Samaritan's Purse. We're a separate organization started in Indiana, you know, 40 years ago, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And, so anyway, after I left, one of the other changes that they made is they changed their name as well. But they're still doing the same ministry around the country. And if you Google Samaritan Institute, it'll show you what the new name is. And there's a Wikipedia that's very accurate.
Okay.
Talk about it and different things like that. But they're faith-based mental health centers. Got one up in Denver, just up the road here from us. We had one in Colorado Springs, but... that didn't quite work out after a number of years. So, you know, the centers come and go sometimes, but most of the centers, the core group, has been together for years and years and years, and just a really marvelous organization. I highly recommend them for folks who, you know, need somebody to talk to.
Yes.
Trying to sort some things out, you know, I mean, as a pastor, I never claimed to be a counselor. What I was triage. And I'd visit with a couple or a person one time, and I'd say, okay, now I'm going to recommend that you go over here. And I always had people up my sleeve, names of people up my sleeve to recommend to who were trained.
Resources, yeah.
Yeah, I just wasn't trained and really didn't feel a desire to do that. So, and I wasn't about to play counselor with somebody's life.
Right.
You know, that's too important. Too important. So, but that's what that is. And, you know, really good organization. Like I said, I highly recommend it.
Yeah. It sounds like a wonderful ministry, Bob, and mission. And I so much support mental health. That was what my nursing career entailed for 40 years. The hospital where I worked was, we were psych. out here at Fort Lyon. Nursing career basically, you know, has centered around mental health, and it just broke my heart when Fort Lyon closed because, oh my goodness, heaven knows we have so many of our military people coming back that need such intense mental health care, and it's just sad, you know, it's just heartbreaking that we don't have that to offer down here anymore.
Well, you know, there's so many moral wounds that people are carrying.
Yes.
Not only in the military, but actually in all of life, you know, where we would do things in our life that we never thought we would do. And and all of a sudden it's a moral wound. And they need to be healed just like a physical wound.
We're going to take a short break here. This is where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. My guest today is Reverend Robert Liebers. Reverend Liebers is currently serving as the executive presbyter for the Pueblo Presbytery in southeastern Colorado. So far, we have been talking a little bit about his background and some of the other positions that he has held. He was an Air Force chaplain. He also worked with the Samaritan Institute, which is a most interesting, has a most interesting mission. We've talked about some of the issues that are facing pastors today, and we'll continue to talk about that throughout the rest of the show. I'd like to encourage you to go to my website, which is Patty Sheen. That is spelled PattiSheene.com. If you'd like to access this show again, refer it to friends and family, which we hope you will, or listen through it yourselves again. Also, you will find under the Blog Talk Radio tab on that website links to all the shows that we have recorded to date. Under each show is a more information tab where you will find websites, social media information, any resources that were mentioned throughout the show. So let's get back to our interview with Pastor Bob. I wanted to mention to you, I know you sent me a pretty comprehensive bio here, and you talked about the different places where you had served. And when I saw that you served in Salida, oh my goodness, I'm so jealous.
Yes.
Because I love Salida. My kids and I used to go ski at Monarch, and I love that little town. I thought it was like it would be the ideal town to live in.
Well, that's where we first went when we came to Colorado. That was my first call in Colorado, was to Salida. And since you mentioned, I mean, when we were there, it was kind of a depressed little town. It isn't like it is now where it's really kind of cool, you know.
Yeah.
Really neat. It was a mining town with the Climax mine, the molybdenum mine up at Climax, Colorado. Employed about 17% of the town, and then they closed a few weeks after I got there. So we went into quite a depression. But I'll tell you a quick story about Monarch Ski Area there, because I served as the chaplain. I served as the chaplain there. Yeah, I know. Here's how it all started. I rode up to go skiing one day with our family doctor, who was a member at the church, and we get there, and he signs in with the ski patrol, and he skis for free. And I said, wait a minute, I got to pay? You know, and he skis for free? What's this? So I got talking to the Catholic priest in town in Salida, and he was a skier too, you know. And I said, Father Joe, what we need to do is we need to make a proposal to Monarch Ski Area, because they have a lot of youth groups out of churches in Texas and Oklahoma every weekend. And I said, how about at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, we take turns holding a little 15-minute devotional worship service on the mountain somewhere. And we advertise where it's going to be. We have a backpack with some songbooks. We meet at this place. We have a little devotional with people while we're on skis, and they go off and go skiing. And if anybody gets hurt, any of the kids in the youth group or whatever have to be left behind in the hospital, you know, in Salida, that we'll go visit them and meet with their parents when they come, and blah, 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 blah. Well, darn if the owners of Monarch didn't buy off on that. So we got season passes, and Father Joe and I would, like I say, take every other week. And that's where our children learned to ski. And Father Joe and I, we just bonded like crazy. And had a wonderful ministry back and forth. In fact, my wife wound up working at the teaching at the Catholic school in Salida because of our relationship. But yeah, Father Joe and I were the chaplains at Monarch for 3 years because we wanted this to be for free.
That is cool, though. I didn't even realize that a skier, you would have a chaplain, but
you know, most of them do.
For heaven's sake.
Yeah, and I'm not sure about right now, but at least, you know, that was in the 80s and 90s they did,
mm-hmm.
and partly it's having somebody who's willing to take the time and go do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're skiing for free, but you're doing something for them, too, obviously.
Right.
And then I worked for a rafting company, too, while I was there, and, you know, not as a chaplain, I was a cook there, but I got to do some weddings and different other things with the skiers, ski patrol, and with the rafters because, once again, Patty, I was out there. I was among them. They got to know me and to trust me. I think that's the bottom line. Anyway,
wow.
just a fun story.
Yeah. Bob, you have served in several pastoral positions. You currently serve the Pueblo Presbytery as Executive Presbyter. And boy, that sure sounds like a fancy name. So
isn't that impressive? That's impressive, isn't it?
What it means and what responsibilities it involves.
Yeah, it does sound impressive. What it is it's for southeastern Colorado. Pueblo Presbytery is all the Presbyterian churches USA in southeastern Colorado. That goes all the way from Kansas to the Continental Divide, which would be Monarch. Okay, and
right.
Then from Monument Hill, between Colorado Springs and Denver, all the way down to New Mexico. And
wow.
In that area, we have 16 churches and 5 new worshiping communities. And so my job is to really be the pastor to the pastors. You know, because pastors, who do they go to?
Mm-hmm.
Who do they turn to, you know, and when they need somebody to talk to? Well, that's partly my job. The other part is to be a resource person for the churches in this area. If a church, for instance, is currently without a pastor, you know, I help them find an interim or help them find a new person. And we work all through the system to make this happen. So my job is to be up to date on what's happening nationwide and where are some of these people that we can tap and bring in here. Who would be a good speaker for a retreat? Who would be a person that we might want to bring in here to do a ski weekend with the youth? You know, these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to, you know, just, you know, being with the other pastors. And then we also have 2 other staff people at the office. And one takes care of all the admin and the other one takes care of the bookkeeping. But I'm the one that takes care of the people kind of thing. So here's the funny part about all of this is that I've been a member of Pueblo Presbytery as a pastor since 1980, so 41 years. And
wow.
And they hired me anyway. And what I mean by that is I'm a known entity, but I also know where all the skeletons are in the closet, see? And but the beauty of it was they hired me during the beginning of the pandemic. And when I came in to take this position and to start, I already knew all the people in the area. Some of my colleagues around the country that started during the pandemic, other executive presbyters, moved into brand new areas. And then they couldn't go out and visit these folks face to face. They had to try and do it all by Zoom. See, but I already knew these folks.
Yeah.
These are my friends. These are my colleagues. And we've been through a lot together. And so if I call Hillary out in Salida, hey, we know what we're talking about. You know,
mm-hmm.
if I call up Bill in Pueblo West, you know, hey, we've been there together. We trust each other. We know each other. So it's been a real blessing that way for me, and I hope for the Presbytery, that we didn't have to start from ground zero, you know. Definitely. We all knew each other, and we trust each other, and we know that we can, you know, that we can count on each other too, which is really, really important. Being a connected church, that we just aren't out there by ourselves, trying to flounder around and figure things out. You know, that's what it is. It's a glorified title for pastor to the pastors, or a mentor to the pastors, or what. But it's not only, by the way, it's not only just the pastors in the churches. Okay, I mean, we've got chaplains that are in the hospital, serving in the hospital. We've got chaplains in the military. We've got two here in Colorado Springs right now, one in the Air Force, one in the Army, that fall under our auspices. We have people who are teaching or in counseling, very much like doing what like the Samaritans Institute does, but in other groups. We have a number of folk who are ordained pastors working in hospice as chaplains. And they're all part of the folks that I visit with as well and have a relationship with. So it isn't just churches. It's wherever the ministry is and wherever God is, that's where our people are. And if you will, you know, where God is active, that's where we try to go. We don't sit around and make these big plans. We sort of wait for the Holy Spirit to open something up, and then we say, okay, that's where God's on the move. Let's go. So that's sort of our mode of operating, if you will.
Right. Well, I'm assuming you have played a very active part in our church right now, Bob, because our pastor unfortunately had to leave her position due to extensive health issues, and we're kind of in that in-between period right now. And I know you have gotten us some, oh my goodness, excellent speakers, and a couple of them happen to be chaplains. You know, I mean, you have gotten us some excellent people. Then, of course, Chaz and Cindy, I'm sure you know them.
Oh, very well, yeah.
So, yeah, you've played a major part in keeping things going for us. So on behalf of our church, yeah, I would like to thank you for that, Bob.
Well, you're very welcome. We're glad. We see God on the move in Los Animas, and you guys are part of that. So we want to be part of it, too, for sure.
Well, thank you. We praise it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned, or I mentioned a little bit before about some folks having the understanding, or they think that their pastor is larger than life, or that their pastor is way holier than they could ever be, or I don't know, you know, how people.
Yes.
You know, so,
or their families are perfect. Their kids are perfectly well behaved, and their marriage is wonderful. And they never have any financial issues because everything is resolved with prayer. And, you know, I mean, I think there's people that really believe that.
Well, you're laughing, but, you know, maybe some folks do, but it certainly is not true. And one of the things that Debbie and I noticed, even when we were in high school at that church in New Jersey, now not the associate pastor that we had the most contact with, but the senior pastor. I mean, he had five boys, and all of them hated the church. And the reason they hated the church is because, in their opinion, the church is what took Dad away. You know, Dad was always at a meeting. Dad was always at a worship service. And I remember Debbie and I having a conversation when we were first married, saying, you know, that if we have children, if we're blessed to have children, which we were, and all the kids in the youth group commit their lives to Christ and our kids do not, we have failed. And I said, the first folks we need to have the love of Christ surround is our own children. And and then the rest will fall into place. And, you know, that's always been our mode of operating. And but does that mean that it's always been easy? No. I mean, when I was in Salida, I was working three jobs to make ends meet, you know, because the church couldn't pay me enough. You know, I remember when we moved to Salida, my gosh, the house we bought was 18.5% interest on that loan. You know, back in the 1980s, in fact, 1980. But, you know, the thing is that we're just normal people. And, you know, I remember whenever I go to a congregation, like when I came to Faith Presbyterian in the Springs in 1984, I was there for 20 years. Folks said, well, what should we call you? Should we call you Reverend Lever? Should we call you this? I said, call me Bob. And, well, what about the children? And I said, well, the children should call me Pastor Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they're in a youth group, they could call me PB. But, you know, there had to be some sort of a differentiation of respect for the office and different other things there with the children and just as an adult. But with the, I remember when we were when I was serving at one of the interims, I got friendly with another pastor who was just right out of seminary, not a Presbyterian, another denomination. And my wife made a connection with his wife, and they were just newly married. And this was, I mean, we'd been married 45 plus years at that time. And I remember one time the other pastor's wife says, you know, well, to my wife says, well, what do you call Bob in public? And my wife responded, Bob. I call him Bob. And she says, well, what do you call your husband? And she says, oh, I call him Father. You know, and it's like, no, don't call him Father. He's your husband. My gosh, you know.
Yeah.
Be real with the people. And,
right.
And I mean, you know, there were days when I was discouraged and people knew it. And there were days when I was ready to strangle the kids and they didn't want to be seen with me anyway. You know, Dad, dropped me off a block from the high school. Okay. You know,
sure.
Don't pull right up there. Oh my gosh. You know, come on, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now our children are young to middle-aged adult friends, and
yes.
I like that. Yeah, don't let the pastor snow you. And some of them like to snow you, and give you the impression that everything is perfect, and as long as you just pray about it, it'll be fine. No, you got to pray about it, but you also got to do the work. And
you got to take the initiative. Yeah, exactly.
And you got to do the work of relationship. And a work of relationship is a pain sometimes, but it also has its benefits in the long run. Yeah, I always tried to be Patty in the pulpit. What you see in the pulpit is what you get on Monday, what you get on Tuesday, what you get on Wednesday. And when we would act crazy over at people's homes during the Super Bowl games, when the Broncos were in the Super Bowl, those first ones and everything, I mean, they got to see the real side of me. You know?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
I'd like to touch on the subject. You know, on this show, a lot of our guests talk about a dark time they've experienced in their life, and it sounds like you really haven't had much in that respect. But let's talk about the church in general. And I am seeing some really difficult struggles for especially smaller churches. Los Animas is a small congregation. We're dealing with the issue especially of meeting finances right now and declining church attendance. Where do you see that going, Bob? And how do you see us coming out of that? How do you see ways that we can help, you know, our churches come out of that? Because most of our congregation, well, people are like me, retired people on a fixed income. I mean, we can't all of a sudden one month say, oh, yeah, I'm going to double my my tithe to the church because I've got all this extra money. We just don't.
No, I understand that. And I think that's exactly, I mean, you're hitting the nail on the head, and I don't have a real good answer. I do think that the future of the church is going to be way different than it was in the 50s. I think that it's going to be way different after this pandemic. And I think that we need to be ready for that. And by the way, Los Animas, with your investment in your, what is it, FaceTime or Zoom? I forget what you're doing. I think you're Zooming or FaceTime.
Facebook Live.
Facebook Live. There you go. I'm not sure how this is going to work out, Patty, but I'm going to say two things. One is, how many more people were reaching for Christ right now compared to where we were before the pandemic? Now, that sounds real strange, okay, because there's way less people in church, but there's way more people listening in. Before I took this position, came into this position, I was doing an interim down in Arizona. There's a little church of 65 people up in the mountains of Arizona. And in the winter, it was 65 people. In the summer, it was 250 because the people from Phoenix would come up because it got so hot in Phoenix. But these 65 people were running everything. Okay. And before the pandemic, we were on YouTube. We would record the services on YouTube and put them up on the website and people could access them. We continued that right into the pandemic. Now, some of those, when we couldn't get together during the pandemic, we would record them ahead of time and then put them up. And then eventually what we did, by the way, this is a great group of people and a lot of fun. And we went to drive-in services during the summer in your car. And we did it in the parking lot and we did it over the radio and we recorded those and put those up on the website. Well, here's the kick. Let's see. The pandemic started March 13th, 2020.
Right.
So a month into the pandemic, month and a half into the pandemic, we had a meeting of the board. And I said to him, I said, do you know how many hits we had on our website to watch our worship services before the pandemic started? They said, no. I said, it was 200 a month. Okay. So 200 a month, somewhere people were clicking onto our website. Okay. And I said, after the pandemic started, do you know what our average is now? And they said, no. And I said, it's 1,300 people a month. People from around the world that knew of this little bitty church in the mountains of Arizona, 90 miles from the next nearest Presbyterian church, were listening in. So consequently, instead of reaching, so if we had 65 members, if we had 50 on a Sunday, that was a big Sunday. Instead of reaching 50 people, look at how many more people we're reaching. You know, and even if you take that 50 and times it by 4, you get 200 versus 1,300.
Right.
So, the church looks so different. And I think the Holy Spirit grabbed us by the ears and drug us about 15 years forward.
Mm-hmm.
And said, you got to figure this out. I think the other thing about the church is, unfortunately, you know, we have buildings that we need to be creative with and how we use them, and that we don't just shut the doors to outside groups. We need to become more like community centers than anything else, I think, nowadays. But the other thing that we're doing in Pueblo Presbytery is what we call new worshiping communities. And they are not churches. They're more like what we did in the Air Force, where you go to where the people are, and then you work with God in that particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 16 churches, but we have 5 new worshiping communities. And one of the new worshiping communities meets in a microbrew in Colorado Springs in the basement, in the tank room of this microbrew. And it started out by being a group that liked to play box games together, board games.
Nice.
And it grew from there. The pastor got involved with the folks and they got to know them. And anyway, then they started doing community projects together, things like this. There's another one that's based around yoga and study. Okay. Greenhorn Ministries, you know about, with Chaz and Cindy. That started out with having dinners for children who were in foster care.
I know. I wish I lived closer.
And then having Bible studies with these kids. And the newest one, which I'm really excited about, happens to be what they call Access Worship. And it's for folks with physical or mental disabilities. It could be children or it could be adults. Folks that aren't necessarily welcome or feel comfortable in a traditional church service, because they might shout out in the middle of the service, or they might stand up and start dancing or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this has started at First Pres in Pueblo, and they had an Easter egg hunt. They wanted to do an Easter egg hunt after service on Easter. Well, some of the folks are blind. So in order to have an Easter egg hunt, the pastor contacted the Pueblo County Bomb Squad, and the Bomb Squad members built Easter eggs that beep.
Oh, how neat. I think
on Easter Sunday. Yeah, on Easter Sunday, the bomb squad showed up at this worship service. And then after the worship service, they went outside, had all their vehicles there, were in their tactical gear, and they ran the beeping Easter eggs. But it was going to get people who maybe aren't involved with church at all, but going to them and saying, hey, here we got this situation. Or, hey, we know that it's uncomfortable for you to be at worship. How can we have a worship service that's comfortable for you? It has nothing to do with buildings. It has nothing to do with anything but relationships. Now, the buildings, yeah, we use the buildings. God bless the folks before us that built them. But, you know, in other words, Patty, I think it's that we got to get out of the mindset of if we build it, they will come. No, they will not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah. So I think it's healthier for the church. We got to be like Paul and Silas. We just don't wait at the temple. All right, we got to be out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the old Sheldon Jackson story. Sheldon Jackson was a missionary, Presbyterian missionary in Southern Colorado, went on up to Alaska after here. And he would come into a town. He came into Los Animas. And you know the first place he went?
Went to the bar.
Tavern. Right, went to the tavern. He wanted to know if there were any Presbyterians. And there were three Presbyterians, so he started your church. And they took up an offering at the bar to help the church get started. And all over Southern Colorado, there are Sheldon Jackson churches. Not all of them made it. Some of them folded.
Right.
But he went where the people were. And we got to get out of our buildings and get to where the people are. And it's all about relationships. It's taking an interest in people. I don't have all the answers, that's for sure. But I'm waiting for the Holy Spirit to stir up people to think about access worship. Dinners for kids in foster care. What about yoga classes? What about, hey, there's all these people over here at the micro group. You know, so who knows where they're going to go, but it's exciting. And what's exciting about it is that the churches have the resources to help not only fund, but encourage these things. And it's happening. I don't know what the answer is for Los Animas. I really don't. I think you need to get somebody in there that likes to go out and be at the county fair and maybe work at a ranch part-time and get to know, I don't know, you know. Because if I was a pastor out at Los Animas, I'd be going around visiting my ranchers and the congregation first, and then after that, go into the, let's go over to La Junta to where they're selling the cattle.
Let's go to the cattle sale barn,
you know. Because this is what these communities are built on, and you don't need to wear a collar. People will know who you are.
Yeah.
And if you're interested, man, you got to learn the lingo. You got to learn how that works with the sale barn and all this kind of stuff. Like I had to learn about dairy. I had to learn about Milo and what you feed the cows. And oh my gosh, you know. But man, you got to go. You got to go. Anyway, that's. That's where I'm at. I don't have a direct answer for you, except be open to the Holy Spirit and be willing to do something that is like totally not what we've been doing.
Well, we got to think out of the box, Bob.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We got to think beyond our walls and think out of the box.
Well, and we've got to allow the Holy Spirit to help us with that thinking.
Yes.
Because I don't think that broadly. And I've got to listen to the younger folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, every one of these new worshiping communities is being run or started by somebody in their mid-40s or below. Just something to think about. Hey, did you know October is Pastor Appreciation Month?
I did. I was just going to mention that to you. As a pastor, Bob, what kind of things did you appreciate from your congregants that express their appreciation for you as a pastor? What kind of things would you like to have happen to you and your family?
The year they bought me the new Mercedes-Benz, that was really nice.
Oh, yeah, that would be sweet.
No, that did
not
happen.
That was in your dreams.
Yeah. No, that did not happen.
Come on, now you sound like one of those television evangelist that
I know.
Back up here, Bob.
Yep, back up that train. I'll tell you what, a note goes a long way. A handwritten note, okay? There were times when, you know, somebody would send us a note and it would have a Ruby Tuesday gift card or Cheesecake Factory or I don't know, you know, whatever the local restaurant is kind of thing. And
right.
It's like, ooh, hey, Debbie and I can go out. That'll be nice.
Yeah, like in Los Angeles, it's Dairy Queen.
Well, whatever. Yeah, but go over to La Anta. There's got to be something in La Anta. You know, but I mean, you know, those kind of things go a long ways.
Yeah.
And however, I did do a little research because in the presbytery itself, we're getting out the word to the churches that this is Pastor Appreciation Month. And I found a really great website, Patty. Can I give you this website over the air?
Yes, please do. And I'll also put it on the there's a place where I make folks aware of resources and mentioned throughout the show. So, yeah.
Okay, it's called it's two words, Faithful Teaching, all run together, faithfulteaching.com.
Okay.
And if you go in there, you have to go into where it has a little search thing with the magnifying glass.
Okay.
And you just put in Pastor Appreciation. They have got the best suggestions.
Nice.
And some of them are little bitty things, you know, mayor or have a reception in honor of the pastor, or they had one where it was, surprise the pastor in the middle of the worship service, you know,
that would be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of different things you can do, but faithfulteaching.com and then do a search for Pastor Appreciation. They got 17 or 18 really good ideas, none of which cost big time money. But it just says thank you in ways that are meaningful, you know, for pastors. But a handwritten, you know what I did every time, in fact, even right now in this position, I keep one file in my file cabinet, letters, notes that I get of encouragement and sometimes of criticism. The criticism ones I usually deal with and then get rid of them. But the encouragement ones I keep for the days when I feel like doing anything in the world but being a pastor, if that makes sense. You know, there are days, I mean, we didn't go through like major dark times in our lives, but I remember coming home and telling Debbie, you know, well, rah, 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 rah. You know, if there was anything else in the world I could do, I would do it. I'm so fed up with this. You know,
yeah,
and I'd read a few of the notes and I'd think about things and, you know, I was okay in a few days, but there were days when I thought,
sure.
I think some pastors are just overwhelmingly discouraged. You know, we mentioned at one time in your notes here about 50% of pastors today seem that they would like to be in a different profession. And I think,
I heard that on a recent podcast, actually.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I think part of it is we come into the pastorate maybe with too high of expectations. We're going to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of that is blamed maybe on seminaries or TV pastors. Everybody wants to be like the TV pastor. And I also think it comes sometimes from a misreading of the Bible. You know, we read the book of Acts and we read the Gospels and we read the letters of Paul and we think, ta-da-da, you know, this is what it's all about. And it's like, you know, those are the superstars. If we were alive then, our names wouldn't be in the Bible, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because
we
would just be the worker bees. And I think everybody wants to be a star, but what we're really called to be is faithful. And to be the worker bee and just continue on with it. And this goes back to the Los Animas thing with the church. Be faithful. God's calling us to be faithful, not superstars. And and I think that's the same thing with pastors. On the other hand, there's a lot of loneliness in the pastorate when you isolate yourself. And that might be because you are shy. to get out, unfortunately, mm-hmm. in this day and age with access to so much media. There is a lot of sexual addiction to pornography,
yes.
among clergy because they're alone. They got the computers. I mean, Focus on the Family, God bless them, here in Colorado Springs. They have a whole division that is dedicated to working with pastors on just that issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it isn't like you got to go down to the corner store and buy a Playboy magazine that they keep in the back undercover like they used to. You know, maybe your dad had one under his T-shirt in his drawer or something. I mean, now,
yeah.
I mean, you know, come on.
It's right on your computer screen, easily accessed by anybody. Yeah,
absolutely.
I hear you.
And you're alone and you're lonely and you don't. Anyway, yeah. I mean, the temptation is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that all of these things add up. And I'll tell you what, personally, I think the action is at the local church. So that's where the excitement is, because that's where the rubber's meeting the road. I mean, that's where things are happening. But it's also where people can be so mean. And if you don't get in there and build those relationships and build that trust, and I don't know, it's tough. You know, and I always tell pastors, I say, listen, the studies show us that the most productive years of a pastorate are 5 through 12, year 5 through year 12.
Wow.
The
okay.
first 4.5 to 5 years, you're building up relationships and trust. And then after that, the people in your congregation trust you enough. You are not just an outsider who's going to leave them in a year. Okay. You're going to be around.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can do some things, say, that they'll give some leadership that they'll trust. But so many pastors, they're jumping here, they're jumping here. And that, you know, Becky's situation was totally different because that was a medical situation. But,
right.
But, you know, oh, well, this church didn't work out. I stayed there a year and a half. So I went over here. It's like, year and a half? Did you even learn where all of your people live?
You don't even know anybody yet.
You know, I mean, come on, man. I mean, the first thing I did when I got to a pastorate, and it didn't matter the size, is I would get a listing of all the people, you know, directory, right? I'd get in the car, and I would drive around and look at their houses. Now, that sounds really dumb. But that way, if Bill and Jane called me, I knew where their house was.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to. Nowadays, yeah, you can Google it and get it on GPS, but back then you couldn't. But if they called me and something happened to their little boy and he's going to the hospital, it's like, I don't need to get out a map and try and figure out where the heck they live. And by driving by somebody's house, you can tell some things about them, can't you?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, and that's why you got to get into people's homes. And you got to get into, in my job now, I got to get into the churches because
mm-hmm.
you can see things. You see things when I would go into people's homes and even today, okay, what do I look for? I look for pictures on a wall. Who's that? Oh, that's my great-grandmother. She came over from Sicily. Really? Tell me about that. Curious. Be curious. Be like George. Curious George. Or you see things around that are important to them. And you say, tell me about that item up there. What is that all about? And
mm-hmm.
here's your kids. Here's a picture of your kids. What are your kids doing now? You know, not, you don't go in and tell them about you. You go in and ask about them.
Sure. It's just like when you're going to somebody's home, I don't care what capacity you're in, even just a friend, you go into the home of someone who has lost a loved one. And
oh my
the
gosh.
Worst thing
yeah.
you can do is not talk about that deceased person because
oh,
they want to talk about that. You know, so you start out with, you know, tell me one of your favorite stories about your husband, or, you know, what was he like, or what was his favorite sport or whatever, and you know, then you open that floodgate of you know, of memories and everything, which that person is just bursting to share with somebody, but people are afraid to ask them, you know, because I don't want to bring back all those sad thoughts, and that's the worst thing you can do. Bob, I could talk to you all day. I really could. however this has been a pure joy.
I've enjoyed it, Patty. This has been a delight. And anytime you want to talk further about other subjects, just let me know.
I may just hold you to that, Bob, and thank you so much for your time. God bless you, and thank you again so very much for all that you shared with us.
You're very welcome, Patty, and God blessings to you on this ministry, and that the right people will be led by the Holy Spirit to hear what they need to hear.
Well, thank you so much. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Folks, in closing, we all experience dark times in our lives. During those times, we encourage you to look to the light, knowing that when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Please go to pattysheene.com. That is PattySheene.com. There you will find a link to all of the shows that we have recorded to date, including this one. We hope that you will refer this show and any others that interest you to friends and family. Also, under each show is a more information tab, and that will lead you to websites, social media information, whatever, for our guests and any resources that may have been mentioned during the show. Until next time, God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a